6:17. With that, I say a very, very good morning to Headmaster Joseph Gerasi.
Good morning, Howard. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. Well, how bad could this be? We're sitting under a tree in a beautiful courtyard on a beautiful Johannesburg summer's morning. There really is very little to complain about.
No, it's absolutely wonderful. And it's wonderful to be here in the morning to actually see the sun rising. And as you said, sometimes, you know, when we're at the school, we don't always realize just how beautiful our campus is. And it's great to hear when people who don't know our campus come on. And as you said, you know, to walk through the tree-lined paths, and it's a really different feel.
It really is. You don't get the sense here in Johannesburg.
No.
So we're going to talk a little bit later, in around about half an hour, about some of the very specifics decisions and style of learning that Red Hill has adopted and that you have adopted. But can you give us a sense of just an overview as to the ethos, the values? What is Red Hill School all about?
Well, when I was asked by the Red Hill board, and I've got to say, I was really privileged to have been asked to come to a school like this, to move to Red Hill, I said to them, look, I've been a headmaster for 20 years already, and I really wasn't looking at managing another school and just, you know, being a headmaster. I had spent 5 years overseas in Australia, and I'd really got to understand how international education worked, and I was privileged to be at some of the top schools. And I said to the board, if I'm going to get back into education again as a head, I want to be able to make changes to education.
Right.
The old system, the old traditional system of educating children was just not working for me, and I'd done a lot of research into what we should be doing at schools and what some of the most progressive schools in the world are doing. And it really is not only about getting excellent results, although, you know, we've seen our results over the last 3 years. With our implementation of our future-focused education, they've gone up by 50%. And it wasn't with the aim of getting better results. It was with the aim of getting children to be able
just
to
a consequence
think
of
about
right.
thinking. How does your brain work? How do you think? And taking a whole lot of things, which, as you said, we'll talk about, how do we change education to ensure that children learn better. And as you said, as a consequence, well, they seem to be getting better results.
Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed when I work with corporates today and I do some training with them, that there's certain basics that we didn't learn. We didn't learn about perception and body language and logic. We just learned, we seem to have learned the syllabus. So we know, what a clown is in Afrikaans, but I'm not really sure if we understand if it's a tragic figure or not a tragic figure.
Sure.
So there's certain components that are missing in our education system. How do you determine what they are? Because we're living in an increasingly changing world. The growth and the way that even the job market is altering is almost on an exponential basis. How do you keep track? How do you keep up?
Well, it's exactly what you've been saying. Where we started was saying, well, what are we preparing children for?
Mm.
So if we take the old traditional model of education, it was to prepare children for the workplace of that time. So an industrial revolution type of education.
Right.
Where you're training people just to go into the factory and do a particular job.
Right.
So we went back to say, well, what does the world of work need? And we know that today what it needs is critical thinkers, innovative thinkers, problem solvers. Because at school we can't actually train children to do the old jobs that were once so stable. We knew 20 years ago that we would have accountants and we'd have teachers and we'd have doctors.
And we could count on it.
And we could count on it.
Right.
Now, with the introduction of technology, our lives are changing every half hour. So how do you train children to do jobs, as you know, which in 5 years' time might be completely different?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to
or
train
not
them.
At all.
Exactly. You've got to train them how to think on their feet, how to be entrepreneurial, and how to be able to change without fearing that change. Because they're going to change jobs 7, 8, 9, 10 times in their lifetime. They've got to be adaptable. They've got to be resilient. So we take all of those dispositions, all right, and we say, how do we actually teach dispositions? How do we teach a child to be creative, to be inquisitive? And that starts all the way from our pre-preparatory school, where we really look at a child and we allow them to play. Because children, you know, we keep talking about we got to teach children to become inquirers. Well, a child is an inquirer from the day it's born. It's
Absolutely.
Natural to who they are.
Right.
What we tend to do at schools is we take away the creativity as they get older instead of allowing that to grow. And so we've looked at our whole education system, and we're lucky that on one campus we go all the way from pre-preparatory to matric.
Mm.
And at every level, We have different things that we put in, but it all follows a continuum from play to eventually writing that matric exam. But how do we teach children to go through all of those stages so that they build upon what they're learning, so ultimately when they come out, they get excellent results, but boy, they're ready to hit that job market.
Sounds absolutely amazing. Time is 6:22. I'm chatting to Joseph Jurassic. All right, so how do we feel? How do you feel about the conversation that we are having?
Look, Red Hill entered the modern world long time ago. And the first thing, when I came into the school and those debates happened, I said, we're not even going to start with these debates. There is no way that I'm going to see Red Hill's name on the Sunday Times newspaper over an issue like hair. So we have the same rules for boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have you've got to be neat and tidy.
Of course.
But if boys want to grow their hair long, they may grow their hair long. They've got to put it in a pony like anybody else would have to do.
See, that is
wow.
If they want to wear an earring, as long as it's the same for boys and girls, so it's one earring in each load, they can do the same thing. So we do not discriminate in terms of gender and in terms of race. So whatever a black child can do, a white child can do.
Right.
Whatever a white child can do.
Well, of course, we saw during 2018 that the hairstyle issue amongst black kids became a very, very real discussion. Certainly, we spoke about it a lot on our show because it is a sensitive issue.
We called our SRC together and we said to them, "Okay, you are the kids of the school. Put the rules together." And they thought about it, and it was an incredible workshop that they had because we had obviously students from different cultures, different race groups, all sitting together and trying to discuss how we deal with these type of things.
Which is an education in of itself.
Oh,
just
it was amazing.
That discussion teaches the kids obviously to look at something from another perspective.
Well, they're not getting somebody telling them what to do. It's now up to them to decide what to do. So if you're on campus, you'll see kids with all different types of hairstyles. Sometimes, for me, I'll just walk up to a kid and I'll say, "Wow, that's a really interesting hairstyle." And what you really, really find sometimes is the kids will, this is a very important part of a child's life. I remember when we first did away with these silly rules, I had one of our students who now happens to be the deputy head boy. And he grew his hair quite long, and he came to me and he said to me, "Mr. Jurassic, I want to just thank you for something." And I said, "What?" He said, "For allowing me to grow my hair." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because this is so vital to my identity, to who I am."
Interesting.
And it was so important for him to be able to show who he was through his hair. And I think many of us feel the same, especially when we're 17 and 18.
Right. And we haven't lost our hair yet.
And he went through that experience, and then he cut his hair.
Right.
All right? But there was no anger of having to go through school.
Yeah, because he chose to do it.
And so children at this age, if we can't allow children in their teenage years to experience their own identity in a safe space, they're going to go into an unsafe space and do that.
How do you balance it, though? Because obviously discipline's important, and rules are very important, and it's just as important to encourage creativity as to let students understand that when they go into the world, there are rules. And if you have to go to work at a certain time and you agree to it, well, then you're going to have to be there. And if you say you're going to do something, then you have to do it. So how do you balance that? Because that, as an educator, that must be an incredibly difficult challenge.
It is a challenge. But again, I mean, at Red Hill, we don't have demerit systems. We don't have often in detentions. We don't do those type of things. I can't explain to you how sometimes, Red Hill is a school of 110 years.
Right.
111 years. A culture forms in a particular place. It's the way we do things around here.
Right.
And there is a sense of respect. There is an incredible relationship between our students and our teachers. And we found the best way is to talk to a child. When you take a child and you sit down the child and you say to them, "How do you think you behaved?" So, for instance, we don't personalize anything. We look at our values. So if you've got a kid who maybe is being a little bit uncaring, you don't take the kid and you don't say to that child, "Jonathan, you really have misbehaved."
Mm-hmm.
You say, "Jonathan, do you think you're acting in a caring way?" So you look at the actual activity.
You teach introspection. Obviously.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
You're not blaming Jonathan the human being. You're looking at the action
Right.
Not at Jonathan.
Right.
And
so
Jonathan,
it allows him not to become that.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So we, you know, we have certain values at the school. Caring is a very important one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also it's the way our campus is set up. As students start to arrive, you'll see young kids from 4, 5, 6, mm-hmm. and you'll see older kids of 11, 12, and 16, 17. They all mix together. We don't have any issues here. We don't have hierarchical systems on the campus. We don't have older kids telling younger kids what to do and how to do things. We have incredible mentor and peer
so
mentor
you don't
systems.
Have prefects, is that right?
No, no, we don't use those words. You know, prefects we don't have. We have an incredible system. We're from grade 10. Our leadership is given to our kids in the different committees that we have. And what we do, again, we model ourselves with what happens outside in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, we have a radio station. Part of their leadership is to become members of that radio station. So we have our own Kathy Kayla, mm-hmm. Who is our Red Radio manager.
Right.
Right? So you get that job. We have people on the radio station who are the financial managers, who are the marketing managers. So it's not about I become a leader and then my job is to walk around and tell people to tuck their shirts.
Right.
Come on. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Leadership is about you have a job, you have a responsibility, and it teaches you about real world experiences. So you so for instance, if we have our matric dance committee,
mm-hmm.
we say to the kids, those of you who want to go into event management, get onto that committee. It's not just about fundraising for the matric dance.
Mm-hmm.
You get given the project. And now you have to coordinate an event from the flowers to the venue to the parking to
right.
the
everything. And this is where education becomes about a lot more than just learning the subject matter. What day did Hitler invade Poland?
Absolutely. Mm. So we talk all about critical and creative thinking.
Yeah.
How do we get our kids to think critically and to be creative thinkers right the way from pre-preparatory all the way through. So in grade 10, for instance, we have an incredible course. I mean, it takes up 5 periods. We have a course that is called Thinking About Thinking, and where kids start to understand what is a question? How do I know that I know? We also have a class in philosophy. And then we have a class that I actually take in terms of children trying to understand their identity. And in that particular class, they do a research project which lasts an entire year. What's interesting about that is they only get their mark at the end of the year. The whole year, their mark is built around handing in their work. I make suggestions. They reflect on where they might have gone wrong. They redo the work. The whole point is to allow students to be able to fail so that they can learn from their mistakes. You know, the old traditional education is you get a maths test, you learn the work, you get 50%, you move on to the next section. Well, the kids have told you they only know 50% of the work, so why are you carrying on? Where's the reflection in the type of work that you're doing? And when do you get the chance to redo that so you can correct those mistakes? Education needs to be very much about reflecting on the work that you've done. And I just see the most amazing kind of things happening. So we have like 4 kids, for instance, who will work on a project. A lot of our work revolves around collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as the teacher, am part of the editing team. I see their work coming through all the time. And we edit together. I make suggestions. They accept my suggestions.
Right.
Or they don't accept my suggestions.
Right. So it's collaborative.
Completely. And it becomes a conversation around education.
And you don't believe in homework.
Okay. So when we look at our pre-preparatory school, we build it all around play. The importance and the power of play and children being able to investigate through play. We believe very strongly in supporting our students emotionally and socially. Our research tells us that if a child is not anxious, the mind opens up
to
learning.
No question.
The more anxiety a child feels, the less they are receptive to learning. So what makes a child most anxious in prep school is, what am I going to get on my test? What is mom and dad going to say about it? Who am I competing with for the best mark? And we have shut down.
Mm.
Over the last 3 years, we've done away with major homework assignments. We don't have any summative testing. And we don't have any awards. We don't give prizes for learning. Learning is something that children must enjoy. I always give the example as a swimming coach. There's no Olympic champion that ever became an Olympic champion without enjoying water. If you don't teach a child to enjoy learning without the anxiety of results and marks, they're never going to be a top academic. So we found that as
well. So you teach a love for it. I mean, that's obviously what the focus is.
And a support. get the emotional support right, get the social support right, get kids to be comfortable in their environment, and just watch what happens when it comes to the learning.
Are there certain kids that that find this type of environment a little bit too, not open, because it's the wrong word, because there are rules, but maybe a little bit too creative, or would prefer a much more rigid structure?
No, but their parents do.
Ah,
okay. Because you've got to remember,
yes,
we live our lives from our lived experiences.
Sure.
All right? So if my lived experience was in a traditional school where all that happened was I was tested and everything was about the mark, then I get very anxious as a parent when I don't see a mark.
No, because I've got nothing to base it on.
The children thrive in that environment. In fact, you know, we've got so many kids wanting to get into Red Hill because the parents have realized that if they're in an environment where everyone is not tested, right, then they can lay off their kids because they're not having to compete. Mm. And how do you form collaboration between students if you're getting them to compete with one another? I'll share with you, Howard, if I know that together we're going to succeed.
Mm.
But if it's up for who's going to be the best student of the year, I ain't sharing nothing with you.
Absolutely right.
Okay, so how do we teach sharing and collaboration when we're making the kids compete? And when people tell me about the real world you got to compete, these are 7 and 8 year olds. Let's teach them how to actually learn before they'll know what to do.
You know what, they'll go home and compete with their brother.
Oh, they naturally compete.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not going to take that away from any person.
Absolutely.
Especially because ultimately who we compete with but ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, so that there's absolutely no doubt. Sounds absolutely incredible. I'm chatting to a principal of Red Hill, and we're talking about the style of schooling and the approach to education at Red Hill School. Really, really incredible. We are coming to you live from the school. We're sitting in the most beautiful courtyard. It's a gorgeous morning here in Johannesburg. To give you some kind of a description, it's got a very, very old world feel about it. It is the buildings are white with green roofs. It is really incredible. We could actually be somewhere in the Cape. That's how beautiful this is. As we look around, students are starting to arrive. I see some parents with young kids. I see some older kids all arriving to begin their 2019.